This episode of Shameless is brought to you by Challengers, starring Zendaya, only in cinemas April 18.
Winona Ryder was one of the biggest celebrities in the world, an Academy Award-winning actress who'd risen to the very top of her industry. CCTV footage of her shoplifting from a major department store would send everything crashing down. Welcome to Scandal from Shameless Podcast, the stories of the biggest celebrity controversies revisited.
Hello.
Hi.
We're here for a one-parter today.
A quick little one-parter.
Yeah, the thing about this story about Winona Ryder is I feel like this is a story we've been wanting to tell for a little while. I think when I think of the name Winona Ryder, I think of two things. I think of this infamous shoplifting scandal, and I also think of her return to form in Stranger Things. And I also feel far too young to have properly understood this story.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that we've been able to dive back into it and kind of retell it for people our age so you can get like a very full sense of what happened.
100%. This has been on our list of topics to cover since we launched Scandal. I feel like you say celebrity scandals and Winona Ryder shoplifting are some of the, you know, one of the first topics that pops into your head. In this series, we're going to trace the rise of Winona's career, her storied relationship with Johnny Depp, including that Winona Forever tattoo, and of course, the shoplifting CCTV footage and subsequent trial that had the media and world in a stranglehold.
There is a lot here. We've got a pretty long run sheet today, so we are going to dive right into it. Let's rewind back to 1971.
All right, Zara. On October 29, 1971, Winona Laura Horowitz was born in Winona County, Minnesota.
Yeah. Now, from that little snippet, you might have guessed that Winona was named after the town she was born in. She was born to parents Cynthia and Michael Horowitz, and she had a pretty unconventional childhood. I mean, I find this fascinating. When Winona was about 7 years old, her family moved to what was essentially a hippie commune in California. Now, it was set up on about 300 acres of land and it was shared by several families.
Winona's parents were cool parents. They were both intellectuals and writers and associated themselves with lots of interesting people. For example, Winona's godfather was the psychologist Timothy Leary, who was famous in the 60s and 70s for his outspoken advocacy for psychedelic drug use.
Yeah, Winona's spoken a lot in interviews about her love for her parents. I mean, take this from Marie Claire. We didn't have a lot of money, but the love compensation was amazing. My dad would make little things exciting, like bringing home Rolos. There's that saying, you find your family, but I would have chosen them even if they weren't my parents. They are my best friends. I mean, it did sound pretty idyllic at home, but Winona in school struggled a bit. In 1982, her family moved. She had to start a new school. And pretty much as soon as she started at this new school, she said she was bullied relentlessly. Now, it got so bad that Winona's parents chose to homeschool her, which, according to Winona, left her with a bit of spare time.
Yeah, although she hadn't really shown much of an interest in acting up until this point, she was clearly a creative child. So as a creative outlet for her, her parents enrolled Winona in acting classes. In 1985, she sent a videotape audition for a film called Desert Bloom. She wasn't successful in getting that part, but the writer and director, David Seltzer, saw her tape and decided she would be right for a different project he was working on, which was a teen drama called Lucas. Winona was 14 years old when she landed the role of Rena in Lucas. And this is when she started using a stage name. She started going by Winona Ryder instead of Winona Horowitz. We don't exactly know why she chose to go under a stage name. We just know that this is when it started happening.
Yeah, 100%. Now, what we do know is that when she was asked what name she'd like to be credited with for Lucas, she was listening to the musician Mitch Ryder and just decided to go with that. Now, Winona's work in Lucas led to more roles in Hollywood, and her parents were wary but supportive. Here's what she had to say about that in Interview magazine. We didn't have any money, and I think that might have been a motivation for a lot of parents, but mine were really afraid of Hollywood. My mum was like, oh, look what happened to Judy Garland. They gave her pills and they bound her breasts. You know, there are all these horror stories, but my mum had this real passion for old movies.
After seeing her work in Lucas, there was one very important director who was particularly interested in young Winona Ryder as a budding talent. So by this point, it's 1987. Winona is 15, about to turn 16, and she has officially caught the attention of director Tim Burton.
Yes. Now, Tim Burton was working on a new film. It was the dark fantasy comedy Beetlejuice, and he felt that Winona was perfect for the role of Lydia, a young gothic girl who can see ghosts. This is a movie I reckon you've at least heard of, if not seen. I mean, when it came out in 1988, it was a pretty big hit. It made around $74 million against a $15 million budget.
This was still very early on in Winona's career, but Beetlejuice was her first proper breakthrough. Not only did it do really well at the box office, it garnered pretty favorable reviews. Unfortunately, despite her massive success in her career, I mean career for a 15-year-old in particular, Winona's life at school didn't get much better. She once told The Cut, I did Beetlejuice and it was a big movie, but it didn't help my high school experience. In fact, it made it worse. I was a freak and a witch.
In the same year that Beetlejuice was released, Winona scored the lead role in the dark teen comedy Heathers. Now, I feel like we need to remind the listeners at this point, Winona Ryder is 16.
Crazy.
At this point in the timeline.
Crazy.
And apparently she loved the Heathers script so much, she actually offered to do it for free. The director, a guy named Michael Lehman, believed that Winona loved this script so much because she related to this idea of being a total outsider and a bit of an outcast. And I just feel like in the context of Winona Ryder, and the story we're telling today, that context is really important. The critics particularly loved Winona in this role. The New York Times labeled her stunning and sympathetic, while the Washington Post even called her Hollywood's most impressive ingenue.
Good pronunciation of that word.
I looked at it and I thought, is it going to come out right the first time?
Ingenue. I think you were bang on. The listeners will let us know.
Yeah, they absolutely will.
Winona was on the up and up, and soon she would meet the first great love of her life. The year was 1989 and she was 17 and starring in another movie, Great Balls of Fire, which was a biopic about the musician Jerry Lee Lewis. And Zara, at the premiere for this film, she met someone called Johnny Depp.
Yeah, now we of course all have an idea of who Johnny Depp is today, and that picture perhaps may not be altogether positive, but what we need to do at this point in the story is rewind back and look at who Johnny Depp was then and at the beginning of his career. He was 21 when he started acting, and by the time he met Winona Ryder, he'd already been married at the age of 20 as well as engaged twice. So he'd been engaged once to actress Sherilyn Fenn of Twin Peaks, and also to Jennifer Grey, who played Baby in Dirty Dancing. Obviously, both of these engagements were ill-fated, and by the time he met Winona at the Great Balls of Fire premiere, he was 26 years old, divorced, and had two broken engagements behind him. She was 17.
She was 17 years old, and as you said, yeah, 26 and had lived a lot of life. It's also worth noting that Johnny Depp had absolutely reached heartthrob status by the late 80s and was something of an alt icon himself. From what both Johnny and Winona have said over the years, they seem to have fallen in love at first sight. And just to state the obvious, guys, it's obviously a little bit of a sticky one to talk about, given she was only 17 and he was 26. Johnny described locking eyes with Winona across the room at the Great Balls of Fire premiere. He said this to Rolling Stone. It was a classic glance, like the zoom lenses in West Side Story, and everything else gets foggy. I knew then.
In the same interview, Winona actually confessed her initial reservations about Johnny Depp. She said, I thought maybe he would be a jerk. I didn't know, but he was really, really shy. Their romance was a total whirlwind. About 5 months after they met, they were engaged. She was 18 years old. He was 27. And I guess it's hard to overstate how much of an it couple these two were. They were kind of an it couple for grungy, alternative, bookish Gen Xers. Like, they were everything.
Yeah.
I guess the I list our pop culture journalist for it. Yeah. I guess, like, the Taylor and Travis of the goths. They're quite like.
Perfect. Now, a lot of the furore surrounding the couple grew because they were so clearly and so publicly in love. As an example, here's what Winona told Interview magazine back then. "What we have, nothing I say will really be right. I will say that he's an amazing human whom I have an enormous amount of respect for and very deep feelings for." Johnny told Rolling Stone this about Winona. "I'm being really honest with you when I say that there's been nothing ever throughout my 27 years that's comparable to the feeling I have with Winona. It's like this weird bounding atom or something. You can think something is the real thing, but it's different when you feel it. The truth is very powerful. Mm. Now I know. Believe me, the Winona Forever tattoo is not something I took lightly. Her eyes kill me."
Big quote to be telling Rolling Stone.
"The truth is very powerful." It's such a platitude.
Also, you can think something is the real thing, but it's different when you feel it.
Yeah.
It's tough. Like, yeah. It's
poor
it's,
Jennifer Grey.
Well, yeah. And it's setting the relationship up, I think, for failure when you're telling the whole world this. Now, of course, do we think the Winona Forever tattoo may be the most famous celebrity tattoo of all time?
Yeah, I was almost about to have a really embarrassing moment, and I want the listeners to know I'm not comparing the two, but it does make me think of when Zayn Malik got Gigi Hadid's eyes tattooed on him. But yes, Winona Forever is far more famous.
Yes, I think it's slightly more famous than the Gigi eyes, but nice try. In 1990, as we know, he got that on his upper arm. It read Winona Forever. It was sort of like this old school banner style tattoo, and it was big news at the time. It was kind of proof of just how in love they were, and it was such a big story that in his 1990 cover feature for Rolling Stone, Johnny, Winona, and the Interviewer discussed the tattoo at length. According to Johnny, Winona was fascinated by the tattooing process and kept taking the bandage off and staring at it afterwards.
Here's a quote. "Winona Forever was carved on at a nearby tattoo parlor as Winona watched with awe. I sort of was in shock," she said. "I kept thinking it was going to wash off or something. I couldn't believe it was real. I mean, it's a big thing because it's so permanent. It ain't going nowhere," Depp said. And by this, I knew he meant business.
Yes, that same year, Johnny and Winona both starred in Tim Burton's Edward Scissorhands. They played on-screen lovers. And this film, of course, was another classic. I mean, it was one of several under Winona's belt by now. Edward Scissorhands is pretty much considered a modern classic. It grossed over four times its original budget and catapulted Johnny, Tim Burton and Winona to A-lister status.
So Winona Ryder was on top of the world, but the next decade or so would prove challenging. We can't cover every film she did over the coming years, but we will take you through the most important things. The year 1993 was a pretty big year in particular for Winona Ryder. She was 22, and although she was absolutely soaring as an A-list Hollywood actress, she was floundering in her personal life. She and Johnny Depp suddenly broke up after about 4 years together, which was something that to this day Winona notes as a really pivotal moment in her life and mental health.
Yeah, we don't know why they broke up, but Johnny did hint at the time that it was because of the media frenzy surrounding their relationship. He did tell the LA Times, "It's very hard to have a personal life in this town. My relationship with Winona, it was my mistake to be as open as we were, but I thought if we were honest, it would destroy that curiosity monster. Instead, it fed it, gave people license to feel they were part of it." It is interesting, I think, watching these celebrities grapple with what will kill that curiosity beast. And I feel like so many people have made this mistake.
Yeah, 100%.
Understandably, to be honest.
Especially at the ages that they were. I can imagine that kind of naivety fueling you and then turning around and being like, holy shit, we gave way too much too quickly and set this up for failure. For her part, Winona's team provided a short statement to People magazine at the time that simply read, "They're young and they grew apart." That year, Johnny had his Winona Forever tattoo altered to read Wino Forever. Which, I don't know what I would do to cover up my tattoo. I think I would just cover the whole thing with a big ass tiger something. Not Wino Forever.
What does Wino even mean?
I don't. Also, how did they do it? How did they just get rid of the N-A and make the space between the words? I'm actually going to Google this.
I think that's a good call.
Wino Forever tattoo. Did he pull it off? Did he not pull it off? Oh, I guess over time it's blurred so much.
Yeah.
How did they do this? Maybe they used laser.
I'm sure. If there's one thing I'm sure of, I'm sure they used a bit of that. Now, Winona was absolutely devastated by the breakup. Speaking about this time, she said, I attempted being an alcoholic for 2 weeks, spending a lot of time in my hotel room, drinking screwdrivers from the minibar, smoking cigarettes and listening to Tom Waits. Years later, she did a really candid interview with Diane Sawyer, where she looked back at this point in her life. She told Diane all about her mental health struggles, which she'd been dealing with basically ever since the breakup with Johnny.
In this interview, she explained that she hadn't been able to sleep for 4 days straight at one point. She said she had suffered paralyzing anxiety attacks and had to check herself into the hospital. Here's a clip of Winona Ryder speaking to Diane Sawyer.
I was scared of that I might do something stupid. I wasn't thinking of suicide in that way, but I was thinking of, I was getting thoughts like, I don't want to be here anymore.
So Winona actually later admitted that this particular interview may not have been the wisest move for her because it contributed to this public perception of her as quote unquote crazy.
Yeah, she said to The Cut, I remember I did Diane Sawyer and I talked about my experiences with anxiety and depression. And I think by doing that, maybe coupled with my physical size, there's this crazy thing. And I've realized recently it's literally impossible to try and change that story. I also think we've got to think about the time here. Like, for someone to come out and talk about anxiety and depression in 2024 gets a very different reception to somebody coming out and talking about it in 2000 or 2001.
I completely
agree.
Like,
it was just a completely different landscape. And I think she'd already been starring in these Tim Burton movies where people may have struggled to kind of separate her as a person from the characters she was playing. And unfortunately for Winona, she was onto something here, because in 2001, she did something that was going to shape and solidify the public's perception of her even more. And not in a good way, but we're going to get to that after the break.
Zara, I am so excited to talk about today's sponsor. It's the new film Challenges. It's from the director of Call Me By Your Name, Luca Guadagnino, and stars and is produced by none other than our girl Zendaya.
Yeah, you know I love her. You love her too.
I love her so much.
Zendaya plays Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who is married to a Grand Slam champion currently on a losing streak. And if that's not bad enough, Tashi's strategy to help her husband break his curse sort of takes a surprising and awkward turn.
Awkward indeed, because now he must face off against his former best friend and Tashi's ex-boyfriend, Patrick. Zara, the tensions are running high.
I know. Tashi's someone who makes no apologies for her game on and off the court. It's her game, her rules, but with her past and present colliding, Tashi must face reality and ask herself, what will it cost to win?
Challenges is the sexy drama that everyone's talking about, and it's definitely not one you want to miss. It's about passion, friendship, and what happens when your past comes back to challenge you.
You can grab a ticket from Tuesday the 26th, so grab your friends and get excited. I will be grabbing you, and we are definitely going to be going to watch it.
Oh, please. Thank you so much to Challenges for making this episode of Shameless possible. All right, Zara, as you said before the break, we're about to talk about what happened to Winona Ryder in 2001. Just before we get there, though, a very, very quick update. In 1999, her career was doing well. The movie Girl Interrupted came out and did quite good things at the box office. The year after, though, in 2000, her career hit a small lull. She starred in a drama called Autumn in New York alongside Richard Gere. It was panned by critics. That same year, she also starred in the complete bomb Lost Souls. The New York Times said her casting in this film was a waste of talent. So things in her career not going too great.
Yeah. So we're going to zoom in on December 12, 2001. Winona was in LA. She was shopping at Saks Fifth Avenue, only she wasn't exactly purchasing anything. News outlet Reuters broke this story, but it was immediately picked up by tabloids around the world. I want to take a quick look at People's initial report to kind of give you a very top-line synopsis on what was going on here. Oscar-nominated actress Winona Ryder, 30, was arrested at the Saks Fifth Avenue in Beverly Hills on Wednesday after store clerks said they saw her place an estimated $4,760 worth of clothes and accessories into her bag with the security tags ripped off.
The report noted that Winona was facing a charge of grand theft. It added that she was facing a further charge of illegal possession of prescription drugs after police found she was carrying, and I quote, a small number of prescription pills with her. Winona's lawyer clarified that she was not under the influence when she was arrested and the pills were actually prescribed to her. As for the theft, though, unfortunately for Winona, the store had security footage of the incident. The security footage would eventually land in the hands of the media and ended up being replayed over and over and over again on TVs across the world.
Can we take a second to talk about this footage?
Please.
Because I had never seen the footage.
Neither.
Before we were researching for this. And I watched it and I just felt immediately sad. This doesn't look like a woman who is trying to evade security and be really sneaky.
No.
She's not trying to hide or be covert. She just doesn't look well. Like, she's rolling around. She's got hangers of stuff and she's rolling around. It's so obvious. Anyone could see it. And I 100%. Think in that vein, it's so obvious, I think, to assume you're not of sound mind.
So I'm watching it right now. And yeah, as you say, this is a woman I don't even think who is cognizant of the fact she's shoplifting. Her arms are filled with stuff, so much stuff that before she gets out the door, she drops some of it and like can't hold all of it in her hands and then just walks out the door like she's not being sneaky.
No.
She's not being sneaky. It's like a woman who's not actually fully aware of her surroundings and what's going on. So I completely agree. It's bizarre to watch back because I think when you read shoplifting, you think, oh, someone who's gone in with a certain motivation and a certain level of covertness about them. This is a woman who's walking around a department store with bundles of stuff in her arms, drops it, picks it back up, and then walks out the door as if nothing's wrong.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, the theme for a lot of these scandals, I guess, is if this happened today, what would the story look like? This is a big one for me. If this happened today, I think we'd be talking about it in a very, very different way. According to police, in the security footage, they were able to see Winona tearing the security tags off clothes, a handbag and hair accessories and placing the goods in a bag with items she'd previously purchased. It's really important to note here that that claim was actually disproven a few months later. All the footage really shows, as we said, is Winona walking around with a bunch of items and walking out what appears to be a front door, not removing the tags. After her arrest, she was reportedly questioned by police for 3 hours, then released on a $20,000 bail. Her attorney said during a press conference, "It will become clear that there was no theft here. Miss Ryder had no intent of depriving anybody of any property."
That lawyer also mentioned during the press conference that Winona was just trying to carry items between departments in the store without stealing them. I mean, the footage does show her walk out what appears to be the store's front door with the items, but that was what he said at the time. It was obviously fascinating. The main question was, why on earth would a rich Hollywood actress steal items when she could easily afford to buy them? I remember this being the conversation.
Yeah, I think it's also fair to say that the media weren't kind to Winona in their speculations about why she did this. This snippet from The Guardian at the time summarizes the way she was discussed quite well. "The shoplifting episode is the latest in a growing number of PR disasters for Ryder, whose career has been dented by such recent flops as Autumn in New York and Lost Souls. Off screen, the actress has admitted to suffering several nervous breakdowns due to stress and overwork. She's also confessed to drowning her sorrows in alcohol." I mean, it's kind of funny. It's like bad movies are kind of put in there with her mental health. I also think it's worth noting here that our pop culture journalist, Eilish, who really deep dives this research and puts a lot of it together for us, had a note in her research to say, "I don't know if you want to include this, but the sheer volume of reports on this scandal is astounding." She said, "Normally if I have to research something from 2001, I will get maybe one or two reliable sources if I'm lucky. There are pages and pages of decent sources from 2001 on this story, which says to me it was absolutely massive, absolutely global news. It was the story." I think that does say a lot.
It says so much. Many outlets even spoke to doctors and and mental health professionals to try to get to the bottom of why Winona would have done this. Those articles made quite a few presumptions about her mental state too. Here's a quote from the New York Post. Therapists have said Ryder's arrest could signal a desperate cry for help from an emotionally fragile and lonely woman. It had nothing to do with money and everything to do with getting relief from all her troubles, said New Jersey-based psychiatrist Patricia Farrell. She was feeding her hurt emotions. She was unable to make good judgment. She acted irrationally because she was in great pain and feeling lonely. God, you have to be some kind of psychiatrist.
I was just about to say.
To speak to the New York Post about a woman I doubt Patricia Farrell, this psychiatrist, has ever met in her life.
And speculate about the state of their mind.
Mm.
And I want to make clear, obviously earlier we said it's clear that Winona wasn't of sound mind. We know that because Winona's spoken of this since.
Mm.
But at this point, we haven't heard from Winona. In January 2002, just before she was officially charged, Vogue reported on a hot new fashion trend, the Free Winona t-shirt. Here's a quote from the Vogue piece. The hottest accessory in LA this week is a $15 black t-shirt bearing a 70s-style female face and the words Free Winona. The bizarre new craze is born out of a grassroots campaign to free Winona Ryder following her arrest last month. The owner of the gift shop that sold these t-shirts told Vogue that he did a 600T run and they were selling like tooth whitener in Hollywood. Vogue pointed out that this grassroots activism was meaningless to the extreme, seeing as Winona was free on bail and hadn't even been charged with anything yet.
I do love
free her from what?
I do kind of want this t-shirt.
I know.
Now, in February 2002, Winona was officially charged with grand theft, commercial burglary, vandalism, and possession of a controlled substance. Through her lawyer, she confirmed she would be pleading not guilty. The court proceedings for this incident took months. From what we can piece together, Winona was charged in February 2002, faced court to enter her plea in May, went to trial in October, convicted in November, and sentenced in December. She spent her 31st birthday in the courthouse.
Yeah, in the middle of all of this, in mid-May, in between these court dates that Mish just mentioned, Winona actually hosted SNL on top of everything else. She was actually promoting her new film with Adam Sandler called Mr. Deeds. Now, she was a pretty good sport. Take this joke from her opening monologue.
You know, people have been acting a little strange around here. You know, there's like a lot of like locking of doors and shifty eyes and a lot of frisking.
I mean, I'm pretty surprised. I obviously know that SNL has been used in so many of the scandals we've covered. SNL and doing the opening monologue is one of the best ways to negate a scandal. To do it in the middle of the trial is interesting though.
Yeah. I mean, we saw it recently with Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell making jokes about the rumors of their affair. It's kind of always been the best way to kind of, I don't know, get back in the good graces of the public eye. But I totally agree with you. In the middle of the trial was a choice. And unfortunately, the LA District Attorney's Office, the people prosecuting Winona, weren't amused. A spokesperson for the office said, this is a criminal case. These are serious charges and not really a joking matter. I love that she does say not really a joking matter. It's not as emphatic as it could be.
Winona's publicist released the following statement after Winona's SNL appearance. It read, the jokes that were made were self-mocking. She was trying to joke about herself and at no level was she trying to be disrespectful to the courts and legal system. Dare I say, she had a point. It's not like this was a like there weren't a heap of victims left behind by this quote-unquote crime.
Well, yeah, I think we're going to talk about that later as well because Winona makes this point herself and it's a really interesting line of thought to go down with a crime like this one. During her SNL performance, Winona also poked fun at a recent magazine cover she'd featured on. Now, we need to come back to those Free Winona tees. Winona actually wore one on the cover of the June 2002 edition of W Magazine. The photo was the one and only reference to the trial throughout the interview. Again, because she wasn't allowed to make direct public comment on the proceedings. But let's get back to the trial, right? In short, it was a circus, Mish.
Yeah, and not just because of the relentless paparazzi out the front of the courthouse every day or, you know, Winona appearing on the cover of magazines wearing that t-shirt. First of all, leading Hollywood executive Peter Guber, who had essentially worked with Winona on the films Dracula and The Age of Innocence, sat on the jury. If you know anything about legal proceedings, you'll know that this is absolutely unheard of that someone who knows and has worked with the accused would be allowed to sit on the jury.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
When we read Eilish's research, we obviously then go through and do our own complimentary research as well. we both read this and went back to Eilish to be like, are we sure?
This is absurd. As per The Guardian at the time, could this be perceived as a conflict of interest? Gubba thought he had no chance of being selected to serve, but there he was in the jury box on day one. Perhaps the logic was the jury pool in Beverly Hills is swimming with so many big fish from the film world, you're bound to net some, so why worry?
That just cannot be true. Like, I know Beverly Hills has a big entertainment scene, but surely they could have found 12 people who didn't know Winona Ryder.
I think so. We still to this day as well have no answers on why he was allowed to sit on the jury. So let's leave that there. The swarm of paparazzi outside the courthouse every single day during the trial was so bad that they actually caused Winona to break her arm.
Yeah, here's Entertainment Weekly's report from June. Trying to get through the crush of TV reporters at the Beverly Hills courthouse, Winona Ryder was hit by a camera and fractured her right arm. A deputy trying to clear the way for her pushed a cameraman who fell and made Ryder, her lawyer, and another deputy tumble. The trial actually had to be paused for a couple of days so Winona could seek medical attention. Throughout the trial, though, let's actually look at what happened when this trial was on and not adjourned because Winona Ryder had broken her arm. The motivations for Winona Ryder's shoplifting were discussed at length, Zara.
Yeah, let's take a moment to look at what was revealed regarding that. The security manager of the store, who was one of the people who stopped Winona as she was leaving the store, said that she was polite and apologetic in the moment. He also claimed that she told him that she'd been told by a director that she had to shoplift in order to prepare for an upcoming role. I mean, quick thinking.
Yeah.
From her.
I'm kind of impressed that you could come up with that. Another store employee testified that Winona had said, "Didn't my assistant pay for it?" when she was stopped by security. This store employee went on to back up the "I'm preparing for a role" claim, saying that Winona had told her this excuse as well. The prosecutors, though, were not buying this. They alleged that Winona Ryder had shoplifted from the store in a pre-Christmas spree.
Yes, as per the Sydney Morning Herald. The prosecutors told how the 30-year-old star brought scissors, a large garment bag and tissue paper with her when she went to the exclusive store in Beverly Hills just before Christmas last year. There she bought a total of 4 items but stole a further 20 worth a total of US$5,560. It's interesting as well because the value of these items keeps changing across the reports.
Mm.
But I guess all we know is it's worth thousands of dollars US.
Yeah, because Winona did not take the stand during her trial, we've never been able to really get her side of what was going on. On the "I'm preparing for a role" thing, no subsequent film starring her as a shoplifter were ever released. But then again, I wonder if you were like working on a film with Winona Ryder about shoplifting and then this happened, maybe you would can it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Outside the courtroom to an audience of reporters, Winona's lawyer denounced the prosecutor's claims. He said, "That testimony was as close to full-blown perjury as I've seen in a courtroom. I believe Sachs targeted her as a celebrity prior to the Christmas holidays, and they have more than one willing partner in the district attorney's office." One particularly tense moment took place in the courtroom when the prosecutors brought up Winona's work with Polly Klass's family, Mish.
Yeah, you guys might be wondering, who is Polly Klass? Well, to tell you this story, we're going to take you almost 10 years backwards. So we're now back in 1993. Winona had actually put up a $200,000 reward for the safe return of a missing 12-year-old girl named Polly Klass who had been kidnapped from her home in Los Angeles. This was a big deal for Winona Ryder and a story that she definitely, you know, wanted to be vocal about. Winona told the press at the time, "This case really hit home for me because I grew up here. I left home, went and made movies, and know how scared I was to be away from home, though obviously in completely different circumstances. I just want to try to help in any way I can to bring Polly back."
Yeah, sadly, shortly after Winona put up the reward, Polly Klass was found to be murdered. Winona dedicated her performance as Jo in the film Little Women to her memory after learning that it was Polly's favourite book. And after Polly's death, her father, Mark Klass, donated Winona's $200,000 reward to charity, and he and Winona actually kept in touch. Mark Klass was actually in attendance at this trial, showing his support for Winona. And as the trial was reaching its end and both sides were making their final case, Winona's lawyer encouraged the judge to keep her work and relationship with the Klass family in mind when making their final sentencing decision.
In response, the prosecutor, Anne Rundle, said this: "What's offensive to me is to trot out the body of a dead child. I've heard this for over a year." You guys might be familiar, there was footage, quite famous footage, of Winona Ryder in court looking aghast and standing up in shock in response to Anne Rundle's words. We're going to play you an audio snippet from what happened in the aftermath of this comment being made. The man you hear interrupting her is Winona Ryder's lawyer. Here's that snippet.
"And in some way say, because she supported...
No, that is just so outrageous, Judge. That really is.
For a year, and I'm asking.
She hasn't listened to anything for a year. She's only been on this case for 4 months.
Let's get to the issues in this matter. You've been in this court long enough to know what things are going to be important to the court."
It's really interesting, and I mean, it's one of those stories where just like a lot of things are coming together, a lot of different headlines are converging here. Mark Klass actually stood up for Winona Ryder outside of the court in front of reporters. Here's what Mark Klass, again, Polly's dad, had to say out the front of the courthouse.
"She has nothing to apologize to me for. She helped me. She came to me in my deepest, darkest hour of need and offered up to $1 million of her own money for the recovery of a little girl that she had never met. You tell me who else has ever done something like that. Apologize to me? No, there's no need to apologize to me. She was a loyal friend to me, and I'll be a loyal friend to her."
How interesting. He really became like this public beacon of support for Winona.
Yeah, like the ultimate defender. Like he definitely showed up throughout this trial to say, no, I can attest to Winona Ryder's character.
Totally. Now, in the end, Winona was found guilty of grand theft and vandalism, which were two felony charges. I know all of this is such American language, but it's an American case. There's not much I can do about that. She was found not guilty of commercial burglary, a charge which, according to the New York Times, required proof that she'd entered the store intending to steal. Prosecutors had also already dropped the charge relating to her prescription pills after she provided proof that she was using them with a prescription.
Yeah, the judge sentenced Winona Ryder to 3 years probation, 480 hours of community service, $3,700 in fines, and $6,355 in restitution. When delivering the sentence, the judge also warned her, if you steal again, you will go to jail.
Yeah, Winona didn't make comment in the moment, only quietly confirming to the judge that she understood the sentence. Outside the court, however, Mark Klass continued to stand up for her, telling reporters, "Winona Ryder may be a double felon, but she's a double felon with a heart." Quite good.
After the sentencing, Winona pretty much went underground. In 2002, the year of her trial, she had appeared in two films that had been made well before the court hearing, Mr. Deeds with Adam Sandler that we mentioned earlier, and the science fiction drama Simone. But after those two films were released, Winona didn't appear in anything until 2006, when she dipped her toe back in the acting waters with a couple of indie films. By this time in her life, she was 35 years old and in a very different place career-wise. After years out of the spotlight and, you know, one of the most outlandish and sensationalized court cases in Hollywood history, the world had well and truly moved on from Winona Ryder. She had gone from like A-list mega celebrity icon to recluse.
Totally. And while it doesn't seem as though she was like struggling for work, she was definitely also not getting offered the same caliber of roles that she was doing in the 90s. And I think it would be remiss of us not to mention the few reasons for this, because there are a few potential reasons. The first one is quite practical. It's an insurance reason. Now, because Winona was technically a convicted felon, insuring her on a film set was pretty pricey. In 2007, Woody Allen, and yes, asterisk next to Woody Allen's name, but we need to say this quote, spoke about how he wanted Winona to star alongside Robert Downey Jr. in his film Melinda and Melinda. For context, Robert Downey Jr. had been in and out of jail at this time for drug use, so his insurance was apparently through the roof as well, Mish.
Yeah, here's the quote. I couldn't get insurance on them. We couldn't get bonded. The completion bonding companies would not bond the picture unless we could insure them. The insurance companies are very prissy and sticky and gave us a hard time. We were heartbroken because I had worked with Winona before and thought she was perfect for this and wanted to work with her again. Also, let's be real. I feel like on top of the insurance thing, which, by the way, I found really interesting. I had not even considered that. The industry isn't historically super kind to women over the age of 30.
No, they are not.
Either.
Yeah, in 2007, Winona finally spoke about the shoplifting incident during an interview with Vogue. Asked how she felt about it all in retrospect, she said, "I didn't have this tremendous sense of guilt because I hadn't hurt anyone. Had I physically harmed someone or caused harm to a human being, I think it would have been an entirely different experience." I think this is what we were speaking to earlier. I think that's true. I think it's bang on.
Yeah, same. On how she reacted throughout the trial process, she said, "I never said a word. I didn't release a statement. I didn't do anything. I just waited for it to be over. The attention was what was embarrassing." Can I pause here? Because I appreciate that the attention would have been overwhelming for Winona Ryder. But she did also cultivate and ask for the attention by doing the SNL monologue and appearing on the cover of W Magazine in Free Winona. Like, I get it. But she courted a lot of this herself, and it wouldn't have been as much of a spectacle if she didn't appear on that. I think the magazine cover in particular for me is a choice.
It's fascinating. I don't know how I feel about that. I think it would have been hard being in the middle of a press tour for a movie where she had to be contracted to do press. She wouldn't have had any choice in SNL or the cover. So the conversation is about, do you acknowledge it or do you not? I think you kind of have to. I think people putting Winona on the cover of Vogue without acknowledging what she was up for, people would have been outraged. So, like, it would have been a really, really tough line to walk, but I also know what you mean. Winona also offered her own reasoning as to why she'd done it. She said, 2 months prior to the shoplifting, I broke my arm in two places while filming a movie. And the doctor, a sort of quack doctor, was giving me a lot of stuff and I was taking it at first to get through the pain. And then there was this weird point when you don't know if you are in pain, but you're taking it.
She continued, "Have you ever taken painkillers? It isn't a reckless state like you're out of your head. It's just confusion. I wonder if that hadn't been going on, if I would have done things differently. I can't or won't ever know, but I remember being really confused." I mean, confused is the word I would give to the CCTV footage that we watched. So that adds up to me. It's also worth noting that in December 2002, just a few days after Winona was sentenced, that doctor that prescribed her those painkillers, a guy named Jules Mark Luzman, had his medical license revoked.
As per Fox News, the Medical Board of California said Luzman's stated specialty was laser surgery, but he catered to the demands of wealthy and/or famous drug seekers for prescription narcotics, which would have otherwise have to be obtained on the street. Winona was named as a celebrity under his treatment, as was Courtney Love, but no one else was named. Apparently, though, he provided one of his patients with around 240 prescriptions over the course of 5 years. I think this is really important.
Yeah, yikes. Winona worked pretty consistently from 2005 onwards, but as we said, mostly on indie films and made-for-TV movies. It wasn't until 2016, so 14 years after her trial, that she made her fully-fledged return to the spotlight with a starring role in a little show, Zara, called Stranger Things.
Yes, just that little show. Now, in a bit of a full-circle vibe, it was Winona's kind of anxious energy that made the creators of Stranger Things, the Duffer Brothers, think she was perfect for the role of Joyce Byers. Winona has starred in 4 seasons of Stranger Things so far and is slated to return for the show's 5th and final season to be released in 2025.
Too scary for me.
No,
what about you?
Oh, God, yeah. I'm a little worse.
I've heard it's very good. I tried, and Winona was great in the 3 episodes I could stomach. Now, her run on Stranger Things has resulted in a massive resurgence of public love for Winona Ryder as an actor. She has been praised consistently by critics for her performance on the show. Variety reported that her, and I quote, "tightly coiled intensity effectively anchors the series." But guys, no matter what direction her career takes, no matter how popular or unpopular Winona is in the public's opinion, the real Winona Ryder as a person is much of an enigma.
Huge enigma. Take this closing paragraph from a feature interview with her for The Cut in 2016. Winona is the former cool girl in repose, grown into a comfortably complicated adult, not in search of a comeback so much as another great book to read. That doesn't mean her life is simple or easy, of course. It's almost like that Twilight Zone episode where that guy says, "I just want to be left alone so I can read my books," she says with a smile. And then he ends up being sent to a planet where it's just him and his books and he's so happy, and then his glasses fall off and they break.
She's perfect for Stranger Things.
She's perfect.
She's perfect.
I wanted to end on that quote because I didn't quite understand it. And I think that's exactly the point.
No, I don't think I fully understand Winona Ryder, but I do think she's an icon.
And Total icon. And someone who was dragged through the mud for a crime that, yes, of course, I'm not going to stand here and say, we should all shoplift. Like, no one accused me of saying that, but I've got to be honest, I think it's a victimless crime for someone who has said she wasn't well at the time, that she was on prescription drugs.
Yeah.
Was deeply confused, and I think it took her 15 years to be able to come back from it.
I agree. And I feel like Saks Fifth Avenue ended up being fine. So, as you said, it's one of those stories where it was just a media frenzy, but the actual details of this story don't amount to the scope of the story that I think it, like, the reputation has for
100%. It's fascinating, and I'm so glad she's finally back. But again, as I said earlier, I think if this was to happen in the last couple of years, we'd be looking at this very differently.
Completely differently. Zaz, thank you.
Thank you.
Big thank you to our pop culture journalist, Eilish Gilligan, for researching this one. We are always grateful for your work. To our senior audio producer, Annabelle Lee, for editing this episode. Thank you to you. And thank you to the listeners.
Thank you to all of you for listening. Share this on your Instagram stories, wherever you're listening to it. That would be wonderful. All right. See you on Thursday. Bye. Bye.
Shameless Media.
This podcast was recorded on Wurundjeri land. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Oh, hi, it's Annabelle Lee and Louis Hansen here. We are your hosts of Everybody Has a Secret.
Woo!
Woo! We are here essentially just to let you know that we drop episodes every week now. Every damn Friday morning, we are in your ears.
That is so exciting. What a time to be in your ear holes. So essentially, each episode, we unpack the real life secrets of our listeners. So this is for everyone who loves, you know, just a little bit of gossip in their lives, which, let's be real, Annabelle, is all of us.
It's absolutely all of us. Don't lie. You all love gossip. So if you want to listen to our show, please do head to your favourite podcast app and listen now.
See you there.
Bye.